Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Gains for Girls podcast. As we saw yesterday, really as the entire nation saw yesterday, out of Ohio, Governor DeWine vetoed the SAFE Act. What the SAFE Act is a piece of legislation that would prevent men from competing in women's sports. What a novel idea. And would prevent chemical and surgical castration of minors in the state of Ohio. But Governor DeWine, a Republican at that, vetoed this bill, saying it's not up to the states, it's not up to any state officers, elected official, to make medical decisions for children. That's their parents' job. And while I agree, it's not up to the government to make decisions for children, there are some decisions that must be made that prevent child abuse. And that's what this bill, and that's what the governor signing this bill would have done for the state of Ohio and really set the precedent for every other state in this nation, the other 28 that have not passed some sort of bill preventing child mutilation, and the other 26 that have not passed a piece of legislation that would prevent men from competing in women's sports. He's received an incredible amount of pushback, which I believe is a good thing to keep the pressure on him, keep the momentum rolling. So ultimately, the state legislature, they have the opportunity to do the right thing. So hopefully that will happen. But super excited for today's guest, as he is the sponsor of this bill, the SAFE Act, in the House side in Ohio. So check out the interview with Representative and Pastor Gary Click. Well, thank you, Representative Click, for coming on today. I was very fortunate a few months ago when initially this hearing became a thing in Ohio to be reached out to come and testify in behalf of keeping women's sports for women. And of course, the other part of this bill, which would be preventing children from continuing or pursuing any sort of life-altering care or surgeries or hormonal experiments, shall we say. But I'm so thrilled to have you on because you're the sponsor of the SAFE Act. And so I want to give you a second to just explain what the SAFE Act is, probably in better words than I just explained it, and why this is important in Ohio.
Well, thank you, Riley. First of all, thank you so much for being a champion for young girls across the nation. I've got some granddaughters, and I look forward to them living in a world where they don't have to compete with boys, and you've been a champion in that far, far greater than I have. And so I want to thank you for that. And yesterday was kind of tied up. I hadn't done any interviews yet, so you're my first interview. And that's because I couldn't say no to you after you traveled all the way to Ohio to help us with our bill. So the SAFE Act portion of this, it's called Saving Adolescents from Experimentation. And what we're preventing is sex change procedures for children. And as soon as you say that, everyone thinks immediately surgery, surgery, surgery. And yes, that's a part of it. But it goes even before the surgeries, it goes to the hormone blockers, the pubertal suppression, and then from there on to the cross-sex, or I call them the opposite-sex hormones that are in kids. Those are dangerous. They have side effects that are out of this world. And kids are not able to provide the informed consent, the understanding. How do you take a 9, 10, 12-year-old and say, hey, you're going to be infertile for the rest of your life. We're going to sterilize you, but you're going to be happy. They can't comprehend that, as well as the osteopenia, the osteoporosis, the increased heart disease, the strokes, all those things. They can't calculate that. And these are being pushed on children, pushed on minors. And the SAFE Act says no.
Absolutely. So it passed. This bill, of course, was introduced in the House and then the Senate, and it passed with a pretty overwhelming majority vote in support of this bill. It got to the governor's desk late in December, mid-December, and it sat there for 10 days, which is the maximum amount that a bill can sit on a governor's desk before he has to decide whether he signs it or doesn't sign it or vetoes it. And yesterday, which happened to be your birthday of all days, so happy late birthday to you.
Thank you.
Governor DeWine, he, in a press conference, of course, the nation saw, We saw Governor DeWine veto this bill, which I can imagine I've seen over the past 24 hours, the amount of pressure that has been put on him, the amount of people who have, I would say, seen, I don't know if there's true colors. Look, I don't know Governor DeWine outside of his voting record, and how he handled different incidences like COVID, for example. But people calling him a coward, which I was certainly one of those, calling him morally bankrupt, which again, I'll be honest, I was one of those because I don't know how someone, especially with an
Right.
R by their
Sure.
name, not that this issue even should be fall on party lines, I don't understand how someone with an R by their name especially could veto this bill. So I kind of wanted to ask your perspective on the veto. And if you think there was kind of some ulterior motives as to why Governor DeWine would veto this, or if you have any insight into, the inner workings of what he was thinking. Because outside looking in, this doesn't represent Ohioans, and it doesn't represent the majority, of course, of America.
Well, you're right. It doesn't represent Ohioans. In a bipartisan fashion, Ohio supports bills like this by 66%. Even among Democrats, 46% of Democrats are with us compared to 38%. So you're right. This is not a partisan issue. And I've had Democrats come to me, left and right. Many of the sponsors that we have had come will say, "Hey, listen, I'm to the left of Bernie Sanders, but I'm for this bill." We've had that frequently. And we've had members of the LGBTQ community even come and testify in favor of the bill. We had one transsexual come and say, "Listen, I transitioned at 19. This is not for children. This is just for adults. And I don't even think I was ready for this." But I don't know the governor's heart. I don't. I do know that we reached out to him from the very beginning, even before we dropped the bill, to be frank, and said, "Hey, we're doing this. We want you to have input along the way. We want to make sure that we're on the same page." I was trying to create a smooth glide path so that we could avoid this moment. And I just wasn't getting feedback from the governor, from his office. It was very, well, the governor wants to protect children. And that's all I got until really an hour before the vote for concurrence. The Senate was getting ready to vote on it. And they were asking for some amendments, and I gave a couple amendments that I felt like I could. But the one that they wanted that I just could not give was they wanted to make an exception for severe cases of gender dysphoria. And I said no. And that wasn't the first time I've said no. I've had to say no on that multiple times because that is the loophole the hospitals were looking for. Because, as you know, if you've studied this whatsoever, every case is severe. And
Yes.
every child, it's a matter of life and death. You talk to Chloe Cole, you talk to Prisha, you talk to Morgan, you talk to so many others. All their parents were told, if you don't affirm your child's gender, which is a misnomer, you're affirming the dysphoria. If you don't affirm your child's gender, they're going to kill themselves. They're going to take their lives. And it just so happens that that's the line that I think the governor fell for. I don't want to be extremely harsh. I know others are, and that's great. And I kind of get beat up for showing a little bit of grace in here. But I was talking to one of the, his hold up was, he's worried that some kids are going to lose their lives. He's looked at kids with tears in their eyes and their parents who said, "If not for this, we would have killed ourselves. We would have died." And this detransitioner, this member of a detransitioner family said, "That's exactly what my parents fell for." They believed it, and they believed the professionals when they said that, and it turns out not to be true. It's a myth. And so I think that's what got to the governor. That was the key thing right there. And it's, I don't want to beat him up too much, but it's a lie. It's not true. And we're going to have to overcome that.
Absolutely. And that's a tactic we see across the board. Even in the position that I was in, competing against a male athlete, which of course is different to a degree. Same tactics they use, though. They told us if we didn't accept this, if we didn't abide by the preferred pronoun usage, if we didn't allow this man into our locker rooms, then we would be responsible if he were to take his own life. It would be our fault. The blood would be on our hands. Which, what a terrible thing to say, equating us to
And
murderers,
it's
equating you,
extremely.
of course, equating you and the
This is
governor to
extremely
murderers,
manipulative.
And that's what it is.
Right. And everyone keeps telling me I'm going to have blood on my hands and all that. And I just know the truth. And so I let that roll off. Every suicide is serious. Every person's life is valuable. I don't care how you identify. I love you no matter how you identify yourself. But the reality is that we have studies that demonstrate, and I did provide these to the governor, that you are 19 times more likely to take your life after transition than before transition. All these convenience samples, convenience studies, and it's how do you feel? Do you feel less suicidal? It's like 3 months after you give a girl testosterone, do you feel better? And yes, they do. Surprisingly, you give a girl testosterone, in 3 months, she feels more powerful. But those are short-term samples of just saying, how do you feel? And ideations, they're not actually fulfilled or committed or attempted suicides. What happens after you transition, and it's usually within a 10-year window, it's usually when you get about the age of 24 or 25, when your prefrontal cortex is fully developed, and you begin looking around and you say, okay, what happened to me? What did the adults allow to happen to me? If you look at people like Chloe, people like Parisha, people like Morgan, it's like, I've lost my breasts. You know, I can't get those back. You know, I'll never be able to breastfeed my child. I don't even know if I'll be able to have children because of the effects of the hormones on my body and all these health risks that I have. And they begin to look at themselves. And let me just say, for any person out there who's gone down that far, you're valuable no matter who you are or what you've done to your life or to your body. There are still people who will love you and who will care for you. And I would be one of them. But sometimes they look inside at themselves and they feel less than because of the mistakes that they made. They feel like no one loves them. They feel like no one cares about them. And that's when the true suicidal ideations manifest themselves to a point where it is very sad that many of them actually attempt to take their lives or take their lives. And we want to get ahead of that. What these children need is good psychotherapy. They need good counseling because gender dysphoria is not a diagnosis by itself. There's always something ahead of that. There's always anxiety. There's always depression, adverse childhood experiences, things that precipitate this. And then the gender dysphoria is an escape, Riley. They're like, I got to get away from myself. That's why they use the term dead naming. It's like, I don't even want that person anymore in my life. And it's almost like a sense of suicide, and they become someone new. They don't call it former naming or old naming. It's called dead naming, and it's called that for a reason. And these people just need to learn that they are valuable as themselves, authentically. You don't have to take hormones or puberty blockers or surgeries to be valuable. Every child needs to know that they are valuable just as they are. And that's what's going to prevent suicide, not puberty, not changing sexes, not cutting off body parts and taking drugs that make you emulate the opposite sex.
And that's why I have a problem with even the verbiage of gender affirming care. Because if you think about it, when we mm-hmm. use that verbiage of gender affirming care, we're basically telling these people that they're correct to believe that they were born in the wrong body, which is a terrible message to tell any impressionable, vulnerable, whether that's an adult or a child, to tell them that they're right to believe they're born in the wrong body is an awful message to send to anyone. And it's interesting you bring up kind of gender dysphoria is a subset typically of another sort of diagnosis. Chloe Cole has mentioned having autism, as have many transitioners and now detransitioners. You see a lot of sexual trauma or some sort of childhood trauma that has affected how they view themselves internally. So that's a very interesting point. But this bill was vetoed, but not all hope is lost. There's some things that can be done, which is really great news. And actually, if you think about it, Ohio joins a long list of states that have typically, you know, red states that have passed some sort of, speaking from the Fairness in Women's Sports Bill side of things, that have gone to the governor's desk and the governor has vetoed. Kentucky, Kansas, North Carolina, all of which have been overturned in these states. And I'm hopeful and I'm confident that Ohio will join on to this growing list of states. But as someone who has some kind of behind the scenes look at things and who's in the mix of this as a representative and again, the sponsor of the bill, what does this look like internally? You know, is this something that can be overridden, the veto?
Absolutely. I think the governor underestimated the blowback from this. And I will tell you that my phone has never blown up like it has yesterday. People want the override. My legislative friends, my colleagues are they were ready to drive down there yesterday if they could have to override the veto. It is very palpable momentum on this. To override the governor's veto. I anticipate that it's going to happen. I've told the governor I would come and have a conversation with him, about the administrative details, and I will. But the reality of it is I think that we are headed to a veto override. I think, every statewide lawmaker has already said that they want this to be overridden, whether it's the Secretary of State, Frank LaRose, whether it is the Attorney Sprague has told me the same thing, who's our treasurer, and J.D. Vance has come out in favor of an override. People are livid about this. They want us to do this because it's the right thing to do. And, just quite frankly, the governor's on an island alone on this, I think. And I don't want to beat him up. And honestly, I hope that in the next few days, or even whether before or after we override this, I hope I can sit down and have a conversation with him and add to his understanding so he knows why this is important. To me, it's not just about pushing him around. It's not about, saying in your face or anything like that. I don't want to be that kind of a person. It's more about policy than personality for me. And I hope that maybe I can shed some light so he understands as we do this that this is the right thing to do and this is the thing that we must do.
Of course. And I love that. Policy, not politics or personality. It's very true. And I wish more representatives at all levels, local, state, federal, would kind of take that approach. I think it would certainly curb some of the divide that we see in this nation. So we appreciate your balance between grace and truth because it's missing a lot of the times. And that's certainly how Jesus, how he moved and how he responded to things is through grace and truth. And speaking of which, you're a pastor yourself.
Yes,
From
ma'am.
a spiritual perspective, I again, broader than just this issue, do you see a lot of kind of the cultural issues that we're seeing as a spiritual battle?
Well, absolutely. And this is infiltrating the church. And so I spoke at a men's conference recently, and I've kept the religious aspects and the arguments out of this legislatively because we don't legislate our religion, but yet we can be informed by our faith and as we do these things. And when I spoke to this group of men, I just asked a question. I said, "How many of you know someone who identifies as trans?" And nearly every hand in the room went up. And then two men actually said, my daughter. And so I've maintained some contact with them afterwards. They're saying, how do we handle this and how do we deal with this? And I think it's very important. Some of these things speed up past the church and past the faith community. It's like, we're sitting there saying, well, that's ridiculous. No one would ever do that. And then the next thing we know, it's all over culture. It's all over society. Our schools are teaching the gender unicorns and boys are playing in girls' sports and they're showing up in the girls' locker rooms. And we're like, whoa, what do you? And I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. I said, the hardest thing to argue is for the obvious. It's like trying to argue that the sky is blue. Well, how do you know it's blue? And how do you know that the grass is green? And it's like, where do you start to argue against the obvious or for the obvious when somebody doesn't believe the obvious? And so the church needs some help, and I'm, considering and praying about and thinking about what we can do and how we can offer some resources to the church community, to the faith community, say, here's how we should appropriately respond to this. And so, that may be something in the future. We'll see. But the church has got to, first of all, and most of all, love kids. Listen, you get somebody in this situation, don't make fun of them. Don't mock them. Don't ridicule them. That never helps us to achieve God's goals. Walt Heyer, I don't know if you know that name, but Walt was
Of
one of the
course.
first people to transition. And the first time Walt went to a church, a pastor came to his house and told him, says, "You're not welcome here." And so he left and he didn't go back to a church for a long time. The next time he went to a church, he was living as a woman at the time. Before he went to church, he went to the pastor. He said, "Am I allowed to come here?" And the pastor said, you're allowed to come here. He said, are you going to try to change me? And the pastor said, my job is to love you. It's God's job to change you. And so he went. And just by the love of God and the grace of God through that, God reached into Walt's heart and to his life. And he detransitioned. And now he runs a very popular Six Change Regret webpage. And he has a testimony that is just known throughout all the nation. And it's faith that makes the difference. You know, Laura Perry is a Christian. Laura Perry Smaltz. Now she's gotten married, but she went through that transition and lived as a boy for a number of years. And her mother was very frustrated, and her mother kept trying to fix the situation. And if you Google, look this up, there's some testimonies there where her mother says, you know, God finally told me you can fix her or I can fix her. So if you want to do it, God said, I'll stand back and let you do it. But if you want me to do it, I need you to step back and let me do it. And long story short, that's what happened. And Laura made it through that. And she's a wonderful, vibrant person today with a great testimony of what God has done in her life. And, you know, for me, when I was asked by Reuters, because, again, I don't want to go citing all the scriptures for this, but they said, you know, what scripture do you use? And I said, well, you know, Jesus taught us to love our neighbors as ourselves. And I just say, if I was a gender dysphoric kid growing up, confused, would I want people to give me a false authenticity or the real authenticity? Would I want someone to put me down a path of hormones that are going to change my thinking and change my mind? 85 to 95% of kids who go through puberty will desist. Their bodies will figure it out. They sort it out as they get older. But 98% of them who go on puberty blockers will persist and then continue to opposite sex hormones and then very likely on to surgery, you know, whether it's in their late teens or into adulthood. So if I'm going to love my neighbors myself, I'm going to protect them from those harms. So I'm sorry, that's probably pretty long-winded. That's the pastor in me, Riley.
I know that. But it's good to hear. And I think it's something that everyone on all sides of the aisle certainly needs to hear, myself included sometimes. It's easy to lose sight of why we fight these fights, and it's to spread his word and his gospel. As a Christian myself, that's why I do what I do. But it's easy to kind of lose sight of that, getting wrapped up in a lot of this. So I appreciate your insight for sure. Last question. What I hear all the time, in every state that I go to testify, or just all the time I hear it, is this isn't really happening here. You know, this is Nebraska. We only have two trans athletes or two trans individuals in the entire state. I know that this issue is incredibly underreported, and I'm sure you do as well, given the messages that you receive from parents or from athletes or from coaches or from doctors or physicians. I know this issue is incredibly underreported, and I got a lot of flack for coming to Ohio because people will say, you're not from here. Your voice doesn't matter. Well, first of all, I believe every young girl, young boy in the country, across the world, deserves to be protected. And if I can help in any way, I'm going to be there. So I think that's a silly argument. But anyways, what's your message to Ohioans, to, you know, your colleagues across the aisle or your colleagues on the Republican side with you? What's your message to them in regards to them saying, them potentially saying, you know, this doesn't happen here?
Well, I would say two things. Number one, I heard you express this, and I love it because it's true. It's not about necessarily how many, you know, the people affected are not just the trans athletes. They say, how many trans athletes are there? But how many young ladies were affected in your locker room by just one trans athlete? Those are the people that are affected, are these girls who have to stand in a locker room or change in a locker room or to compete unfairly or get a hockey put through their teeth. Or experience damage, physical damage by competing against a male involuntarily. But the other thing is it's highly underreported. I spoke to a father who was telling me coming out of a junior high school on a whole different topic. He said, yeah, I told my son, I said, he's going into junior high. He said, I just told him, I said, you know, you're going to see things you've never seen before, hear things you never heard before. So don't worry about it. You're not going to see or hear anything that I didn't see or hear when I was in middle school. And just, you know, just tell me, we'll talk about it. Don't worry. Don't be embarrassed. And he said he blew me out of the water the first day because a girl identified as a boy and came changing in his locker room. And he said, no, I've never experienced that before. And I said, well, you know, I can help you with this. We can get your story out. He's like, I just don't want to put my son through that embarrassment. I don't want to put my child through this. And that is what happens time and time and time again. Because as soon as you put your child out there, whether it's about any of this transgender stuff, whether it's in the sports or in the detransition or the transitioning, there are so many parents who come and talk to me offline. They won't come out in person because their family is at stake. They get bullied. They're embarrassed. And it is high. People come to me all the time, as they do to you, and they talk about these things, but they won't go on the record. It needs to be taken care of. They shouldn't have to put their family name and their family safety or their reputation at stake to be protected. And so that's why there's people like Riley Gaines who are doing it. And that's why there's people like Gary Click who are doing it. And we are not alone. There's an army of folks behind us who are protecting young boys and young girls. And I am not a quitter. I might not shout real loud. I might not scream real loud. I might not get red faced, but I persist and I plod on and I don't quit. And that's how we got here today. This bill has been reported dead so many times, you wouldn't believe it. But here we are, and we are going to get it across the finish line, Riley. Thank you so much for being a champion. Thank you for coming to Ohio. Thank you for going everywhere you go. And thank you for this podcast.
Well, thank you. We are so appreciative of you and your effort. It's needed now more than ever. And you give me hope. I think you give a lot of people hope. Again, Ohioans, but really a lot broader than that. I wholeheartedly believe Ohio will get through, will pass the SAFE Act and become the 24th state to implement some sort of fairness in women's sports bill, and the 22nd state to implement some sort of protection of minors against experimentation as implemented in the SAFE Act. So we're very, very appreciative of you, Representative Click, and thank you for coming on. I think we all certainly have a lot to learn from Representative Click in terms of how we communicate this issue, what we can do to combat this issue, to get this over the finish line in Ohio. Make sure you are reaching out. If you're from the state of Ohio, of course, make sure you're reaching out to your state and local representatives and senators. And if you're not from the state of Ohio, I believe it's still important to be reaching out to the governor's office to make sure he knows the majority of, again, not just Ohio, but the majority of this nation is not in support of this veto, as shown by the lieutenant governor, as shown by the attorney general, as shown by the Senate president and the Speaker of the House in Ohio. Keep the pressure on them. Keep the momentum rolling. That's what we need. That's how we get things done. Thank you guys for tuning in. Make sure you like, subscribe, comment. You can check this out at outkick.com or anywhere where you get your podcasts. And we will see you again next week.